Good morning. This is the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm Elaine Baumgartel. Today we're going to talk about women's reproductive rights here in New Mexico. Lawmakers have introduced an assortment of bills this year that would impact them, including an abortion parental notification measure, a bill that would require abortion providers to give women seeking an abortion certain information before doing the procedure, one that would criminalize abortions when they are intended to destroy evidence of sexual assault, and another proposal that changes the definition of what crime has been committed against a pregnant woman. We are going to go into more details with these bills, their status, and what they would mean for New Mexicans today. Joining us to discuss are Dana Middleton of the National Organization for Women Santa Fe Chapter and Nancy Koenigsberg, who is with Disability Rights New Mexico. I did invite sponsors of the House bills we're talking about today. They are Representatives Larry Larrañaga, Nora Espinosa, Catherine Brown, and Alonzo Baldonado. We may hear from one or a few of them, although none of them have confirmed that they are available to join the conversation today. We would like to hear from you today. Are you concerned that abortion rights are under attack in New Mexico, or do you see these measures as necessary to protect women and families? You can email callinshow@kunm.org, post your comments online at kunm.org, or call in live during the show. Those numbers are 277-586-6 locally here in Albuquerque. You can also call toll free 877-899-5866. Good morning, Dana with NOW and Nancy with Disability Rights New Mexico. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning.
So, Dana, I wanted to go to you first. You're with NOW, the Santa Fe chapter, and I wanted to first ask you to kind of give a reaction to the assortment of bills that have been introduced this year by New Mexico lawmakers. Just kind of an overview reaction. Do you see these bills as a threat to women's reproductive rights?
Oh, absolutely. In the last 2 years, we've seen some of these bills come up. The parental notification has come up before as well. But all of these bills are really dangerous for women and what their choices are and what they decide to do. Most women that want to have an abortion and choose to already have families. They already have a child, the majority. And these bills just really, really get in the way of a woman making her choice along with the advice and concern of her doctor.
I can't hear. Thank you.
Yes.
These bills, I have a list of these bills. The first one, I'm going to talk mainly about the four bills that have been introduced in the New Mexico House. There is the Unborn Victims of Violence Act. There is the Women's Right to Know Act, the Parental Notification Rights Act, and the Abortion as Evidence Tampering in some cases. That last one has received a significant amount of attention. Can you kind of explain how you see that bill and what you see that bill doing and your reactions to it?
Well, the immediate status of that bill, which is House Bill number 206, that is, we understand, as of yesterday, being rewritten by Representative Brown. The language in that outraged not only us in New Mexico, but all over the country. And, it was on the cover of the Huffington Post. She has taken that bill back. She has withdrawn it and is rewriting it to take some of the, I think, inflammatory language out, but also it's a dangerous bill because a rape victim always, when she chooses to come to the hospital and report it, is given the morning after pill. So that pretty much helps her not to have to make a very painful decision of whether or not to carry the child to term. But, you know, when a rape victim doesn't go and doesn't get the morning after pill and then chooses to have an abortion, this bill is absolutely just so insulting to women and really so insensitive to a rape victim. So we're against that.
I did invite the House representative who introduced that bill is Catherine Brown of Eddy County. She is a Republican. And according to some press releases from the Republican Party House caucus here in New Mexico, Representative Brown has been quoted saying that New Mexico needs to strengthen its laws to deter sex offenders and that she believes this law can help to protect women across the state. As I see it, this bill would, I think the way I'm trying to interpret the intention of this bill, as we don't have Representative Brown here with us, is that if someone were a perpetrator of incest or rape and wanted to try to prevent themselves from being held responsible for that crime by coercing or trying to facilitate the victim of that crime having an abortion in order to eliminate those the genetic evidence of that sexual assault, are there current laws or ways that this kind of behavior is already prevented in your mind?
Yes, there are. I think this is just another way to chip away for women to have full abortion rights and full reproductive freedom. That is the bottom line here. I mean, I think the laws that exist in our state would not in any way get in the way of that kind of situation. I don't think a perpetrator, for the most part, would even consider doing that or think about it. So we just feel it's an unnecessary and really damaging bill.
In your experience, are there cases where you've heard women say that they have been coerced or pressured into getting an abortion by someone who has sexually assaulted them?
I have never heard of that. And I used to work up in Taos at the Rape Crisis Center. No one at Planned Parenthood or in Esperanza here, Solis as it's called now, in Santa Fe have ever said that. I mean, I just believe this is a very dangerous bill, and this is just chipping away to make sure that women do not have choices.
The tampering with evidence bill is, again, House Bill 206, introduced by Representative Catherine Brown. I did invite Catherine Brown to join us by phone this morning from Santa Fe. I did not receive a response from her personally, although the public information officer for the Republican House Caucus did say that she was not available to join us this morning. We're talking about abortion rights here in New Mexico and some of the legislation that's been introduced by state lawmakers during this year's legislative session. Dana Middleton is with the National Organization for Women's Santa Fe chapter. Nancy Koenigsberg is with the Disability Rights New Mexico organization. Nancy, I want to bring you into the conversation now about House Bill 206, this tampering with evidence bill. What perspective can you bring from the disability rights community on what this would mean for women in New Mexico were it to make it through? Right now it's in the House Consumer and Public Affairs Committee.
Thanks, Elaine. I'd like to do an introductory remark to give some context to this. We are the designated protection and advocacy system for New Mexico, and we're here to protect, promote, and expand the civil and legal rights of people with disabilities. When I was preparing for the show, I did a little bit of research and found some startling statistics. I will keep them brief as per your instructions. There are three that I want to talk about. Children with disabilities are three times more likely to be victims of sexual violence than children without disabilities. 87% of individuals with severe mental illness are sexually or physically assaulted in their lifetime.
Wait, 87% you said?
With severe mental illness.
Severe.
Mm-hmm. And maybe the most startling, not that these others aren't, are that 90% of people with developmental disabilities will be victims of sexual assault in their lifetimes. And actually some other things say that it's actually quite a bit higher than 90%. But can you imagine 90%? So if these laws go through, the impact on people with disabilities can be profound in terms of their lives, their ability to have any control whatsoever on what goes on. They often don't have the ability to get to an emergency room to report within 12 hours, for example, after an assault, because they may not be able to do so or even convey that that's happened to them.
And of course, the disabled community is a very diverse community of people with
Absolutely.
Different interests and needs and conditions. And perhaps you can kind of give us an idea of some of the diversity within the community and the different kinds of impacts on different aspects, different categories of people within the community. Categories, maybe not the right word, but different folks
Sure.
within the community who have different disabilities and how this particular law might affect them differently.
Well, I'll start with people with disabilities are people first who come from every kind of background, just like the rest of us. So people with disabilities will have as varied perspective on this as everybody else.
Well, and I've often heard the saying of that we all, in general, will experience some form of disability in our lives at some point.
Sure, from the simplest thing of when we become senior citizens and we have various impairments and impediments. Actually, I didn't mention that seniors too, the rate of assault on seniors who are by family members, and most assault on people are by people that they know and care for them or are supposed to take care of them. And the rate for senior citizens is growing exponentially. I often say when people think about disability as being other, any of us are an accident away from having a disability. So the notion that it disability can't happen to us or none of this is relevant to me, I think is improper thinking because it's very close.
So how is it different for folks who have a developmental disability in the context of if and when they are victims of sexual assault and a pregnancy occurs?
Sure.
How is a developmental disability different than a physical disability in the way that those folks might need support under the law?
Well, I think, again, even developmental disability or an intellectual impairment is a very broad term. I mean, you can have somebody from mild mental retardation, Down syndrome, which most people are familiar with, goes from mild to pretty significant. I think the most important things to consider is that often people with a cognitive limitation, somebody with TBI, even
a traumatic brain injury.
Yes. Have the inability to communicate or report. They just can't be able to describe what's happened to them. There is a power differential between the perpetrator and the victim. So even if the person could communicate, they may be terribly frightened to do so or be able to describe what happened. People who live in congregate settings, nursing homes, assisted living facilities, group homes, again, will likely be the victim of somebody that they know. And especially for people with developmental disabilities, the way, how they're being cared for, the focus is on teaching compliance. So if somebody who's caring for you does something and they say, don't tell, you want to be good and you want to comply. So the chances of the report are slim. The only way that people might know is a change of behavior. And then the person who observes the change in behavior needs to do something about it. And often that doesn't happen as well. So if there is a rape and if there is a pregnancy, that may not even come to light until somebody's, they can't fit into their clothes anymore.
I'd like to read a brief segment of this House Bill 206. Tampering with evidence shall include procuring or facilitating an abortion or compelling or coercing another to obtain an abortion of a fetus that is the result of criminal sexual penetration or incest with the intent to destroy evidence of the crime. So in the context that we're talking about with folks who perhaps have a guardian who is empowered to make some or all decisions, what does this language mean for that circumstance?
Well, like most things in the law, it's not simple. For example, a guardian of an adult, in terms of what kinds of health care decisions can be made for that person. I'll spend a little bit of time, but I also want to go to the procuring and facilitating. Generally speaking, given the nature of an abortion, it is my belief that it is not a general health care decision, and the guardian would need the permission of a court to go ahead and do so.
And that's because of a right to bear children.
Correct.
Under the law.
Correct. That's true. So assuming that the guardian has either the authority under the original appointment order, which I doubt that would be there, or gets permission of the court to go ahead and consent to it, then of course the guardian would be the one procuring or facilitating. So if a young woman or if a woman is 18 weeks pregnant, by the time the guardian finds out, gets to a court, even though that would be expedited, that person would be the one who would seek the health care and facilitate the person getting the procedure. So these words are extraordinarily important, and talk about getting in the way of the guardian even being able to address what's in the best interest of the protected person, the impact is huge. And I think probably detrimental to the ability to make the appropriate best interest decision on behalf of the protected person.
Catherine Brown, who introduced this particular bill in response to some of the criticism of the bill in a press release from the Republican Party House caucus in New Mexico. I did invite Catherine Brown to join us this morning, and as far as I know, she was unavailable to join us. According to a press release, she has said, quote, House Bill 206 was never intended to punish or criminalize rape victims. Its intent is solely to deter rape and cases of incest. The rapist, not the victim, would be charged with tampering of evidence. And she says, I am submitting a substitute draft to make the intent of the legislation abundantly clear. In your mind, Nancy, and then I'm going to go back to Dana in a moment, does her response about not criminalizing rape victims address, I mean, doesn't address the issues that you've just brought up, because we're talking about folks who have more complicated relationships with respect to their legal rights?
I'm trying to wrap my head around that concept that somehow this protects rape victims by somehow preserving the evidence to prosecute the alleged rapist. I'm just not understanding it. If the goal is, it seems to me that DNA evidence is, if there is, for example, if a person gets there quickly, if the rape is known, then the rape kits preserve DNA evidence. And I would imagine, though I don't know how this would work medically, that if there is an abortion, that it's possible to preserve some tissue from, you know, the aborted embryo. So I see this as being totally absurd. I think it's extraordinarily important to remember as well that if the goal is to prosecute the rapist, that part of what needs to be considered is prosecution when the victim has a disability is somehow, I think, seen as lesser priority. And another part of it is whether or not the victim is considered an accurate reporter. So there are other complicating factors in there for people with disabilities, but I don't see how this is helpful.
We did get a comment from a listener who did not leave their name, who says, as they read the bill, the intent is to go after the perpetrator and charge them with tampering with evidence if they coerce the victim into getting an abortion. The victim is the evidence, not the fetus. And this particular listener says this bill would especially help girls and women who are victims of incest. Why doesn't anyone seem to get this? Dana, your response.
Yeah, I don't get the bill either. I agree with Nancy. And I think it's important. Just I want to say really quickly that people need to go on to our website for our state government, www.nmlegis.gov. It is important for people to read these bills.
Let me pause you, Dana, and just point out that I at KUNM.org, I have posted links to all four of these pieces of House legislation that we're talking to. So if you're listening and you want to pull up the bill itself and take a look at the language, you can find a link to those bills online at KUNM.org. Just click on the posting for today's show, and you'll find some links there. Go ahead and continue, Dana.
So anyway, yes, I do agree with Nancy that it's difficult to understand what she means, and maybe that's why she has to rewrite it. But to make it really simple, I just feel that it's a dangerous bill because, just like the others, it really does, in the end, chip away at a woman's right. I don't see this protecting the victim in any way, and I think from what Nancy said, too, we have a law in place. We have rape victims in hospitals that are protected. When the rape kit is done, there's evidence. I don't think it has anything to do with a pregnancy, really. I think this bill just absolutely chips away a woman's rights.
We're talking about abortion rights in New Mexico and some of the legislation that's been introduced in the state legislature. This is the KUNM Collins Show. What do you think about a law that would make it illegal to facilitate an abortion in order to get rid of evidence of a sexual assault. The number to call locally here in Albuquerque is 277-5866. You can also call toll-free 877-899-5866. You can email callinshow@kunm.org. You can also post your comments online at kunm.org. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with your calls.
Sandia Prep offers rigorous academics and remarkable opportunities for students in grades 6 through 12, now accepting applications for fall 2013. Learn more at sandiaprep.org. This message sponsored by tax-exempt Sandia Prep School.
Alicia Keys, Jennifer Hudson, Regina Taylor, Oprah Winfrey, and Kofi Annan. I am Maya Angelou on Public Radio, telling our stories.
Maya Angelou's Black History Month special from PRI, Public Radio International.
Sunday morning at 11 on 89.9 KUNM.
This is the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm Elaine Baumgartel. It's about 25 minutes past 8 o'clock, and we're taking your calls this morning on legislation that's been introduced in the state legislature that would affect women's reproductive rights. Give us a call again locally. 277-5866 is the number to participate. You can also call toll-free 877-899-5866. Joining us this morning, Dana Middleton of the National Organization for Women's Santa Fe chapter, and Nancy Koenigsberg, who is with Disability Rights New Mexico. Let's go now to the phones. Glenn in Hemis Springs. Good morning, Glenn. You're on the air.
Good morning. Thanks so much for this program. In 1967, in the summer, I worked for a Republican senator in Washington, D.C., and the comment of one of his staff people, Tony, still sticks in my head. She needed an abortion, and it wasn't legal, so she went to Tijuana, Mexico, back alley, and nearly died. I think that needs to be recalled for people who get on the bandwagon. We just have to stop abortions and take women's rights away. I have been married to two women who had abortions before we married, and I know it's a painful process. I think men need to keep away from a woman other than being supportive. When I was a Lutheran pastor, my bishop fortunately sent out that kind of message to us pastors, saying your only appropriate response is to be supportive pastorally. And I think that's good information for men and others who are chipping away at abortion rights. Thank you.
Thanks for your call, Glenn. Let's go to, I think it's Colleen or Colin in Albuquerque. Good morning. You're on the air.
Yes. I just wanted to say that I think this bill is totally offensive. And that's also speaking as a person who did experience rape.
Hey, Colleen, are you on a speakerphone?
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. I'll take it off.
Yeah, put your handset up to your ear. We'll be able to hear you a little bit better. You might have to repeat a little bit of what you were saying.
Oh, okay. Well, I just want to say this bill is totally offensive, and I feel like it's being put forward by a white, right-wing, Republican Tea Party sheeple, and that they really need to reinforce the Violence Against Women Act as opposed to trying to put something like this through. That's all I wanted to say.
Thanks for your call, Colleen. Let's go to Roxanne in Albuquerque. Good morning, Roxanne. You're on the air.
My comment is, and I agree with the last caller, that it is really offensive. And I think there's a certain amount of power that people that are perpetrating rape crimes get out of the act. And if anything, it's going to encourage rape because it's going to give them an even bigger sense of power in that they're creating children out of it. You know, I really don't think it's going to help at all. I think it is offensive to women.
Thanks for your call, Roxanne. Dana Middleton with the National Organization for Women Santa Fe chapter, your response to the callers.
Well, I'm really glad to see people being very forthright about what they feel and understand what all this means. I think a lot of people really get this. And I can tell you that in celebrating Roe v. Wade's 40th anniversary last Friday in the Roundhouse, I was also so pleased not only to our gentlemen callers here who, you know, say it so beautifully, but we have really wonderful male legislators that I would say they get it. They just get it.
Let's talk about another one of these bills. We've been talking about House Bill 206. The abortion is evidence tampering in some cases is how it's being referred to. It was introduced by Representative Catherine Brown, and it's in the House Consumer and Public Affairs Committee right now. There are two other bills that are scheduled to be heard, I believe, today in that committee, the House Consumer and Public Affairs Committee. One of them is House Bill 177. It's called the Parental Notification Rights Act, and it was introduced by Alonzo Baldonado. And again, that one is scheduled to be heard in the Consumer and Public Affairs Committee at the Roundhouse today. Dana, talk to me a little bit about your perspective on this particular piece of legislation that would require parental notification for women and girls under the age of 16, I believe, for their parents to be notified.
Right. This is a very important bill. And last year it came up as well, and we were there in the hearing and defeated it. They usually table it, and then they come back the next year and do it again. I want to start by saying that 6 out of 10 youth that involve their parents when seeking abortions, that says to me that a lot of young people have really solid and very good relationships with their parents, and we know for a fact that these young people do consult their parents and have conversations about making a decision whether or not to get an abortion. What is really important to know is that then the other young people have usually a very, very good reason of why they don't want to tell their parents. There are families in our state that are very dysfunctional. Sometimes there's incest involved. Sometimes it's, you know, an uncle that has caused the pregnancy. And the young woman needs to be respected, and she needs to get the kind of help she needs to make the decision. So we are against this bill to have anything to do with decision-making other than the young woman and her doctor.
Again, I did invite the representative who introduced this bill, Alonzo Baldonado, to join us. He did tell me that he would try to join us, but then I did not hear confirmation back, so I'm not sure if he's going to be able to or not. Nancy, your thoughts on this parental notification bill. Are there particular facets of the impact of this bill on the disabled community?
Boy, is this complicated. On behalf of children with disabilities, a reminder that they are 3 times more likely to be victims of sexual violence than children without disabilities. So when we're trying to picture this, again, the perpetrator, the rapist, will likely be somebody not only known to the child, but close to the child, a family member, caretaker, somebody at school, something like that. So, again, you have the power differential, which is hard for adults, and imagine what that's like for children. Again, the ability to be able to report. I mean, if you have a young woman with autism, what's that like? Can she even be able to have this conversation? It may be to quote, inform her parents. What if the person who was the, if it's incest, how does that happen? So then we get into the complications of how that information gets conveyed, and it becomes incumbent upon the caregiver or the parent to notice something's happened. And then, you know, I'm struggling with the dynamics of this because the dynamics are complicated.
Let me introduce another twist.
Okay.
Which
Thanks.
Is, let me make it more complicated.
Yeah.
What about consensual sexual relationships
right. For
young people who have some sort of disability, mm-hmm. who become pregnant and seek out an abortion? How would this parental rights bill affect that type of situation?
Well, I think then you're going into the same situation. If we're talking about consensual sex between two 15-year-olds, for example, then the first question would be, what is there a cognitive impairment? Is there a limitation? And you know, disability comes in all stripes. So it could be a young woman who uses a wheelchair. So she would be in the same process as anybody else in terms of whether or not she is making a decision in her best interests. It may be that she wants to parent. It may be that she's physically not able to parent or to bear a child. And if she were if she can't go ahead and act, then she may have complications from that. And again, I think the most important piece of this is for young people who can have the conversation with their parents, that if 6 out of 10, as Dana reports, do discuss it with their parents, then, you know, they're in the same situation as everybody else. And I would agree, you know, based on, you know, the life experience of being a woman, that if a young person chooses not to report, that means she has the capacity to make the choice, then there's likely a good reason to do so. I'm really perplexed about and concerned about what this would do for young women who can't, excuse me, especially when the likelihood that the perpetrator is somebody that they know. How do we protect those people? And again, when you have the notion that a person with a developmental disability is likely to be a victim of sexual assault, there's a 90% chance. What does this mean if it's within the household? If it's the perpetrator as a family member and the mother knows and chooses not to, how does this all work?
Let's go to the phones. Frances in Albuquerque. Good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning, Elaine. I appreciate the opportunity and thank you for having the show. I guess my question to the panel is, I have to agree that I don't think parental involvement is a good thing all the time. But I think that a young woman certainly should have some sort of guardian or, you know, someone to basically hold their hand through the process, because it's obviously a very emotional and physical toll. And I'm wondering if that exists in New Mexico currently with women that are, 14, 15, younger than that. And if not, if maybe that's a good alternative to what is, what they're trying to get passed through the legislature right now, and that parents have to be involved.
Mm-hmm. The representative who introduced this parental notification bill in the House, his name is Alonzo Baldonado. I don't know if he's going to join us this morning, but I did not get confirmation that he would. In a press release from the Republican Party House Caucus, Representative Baldonado stated, quote, "This legislation is extremely important to me, and I know that parents across New Mexico believe this is an essential measure to protect children." He says, "Not only does this provide teenage girls a chance to sit down, have an informed discussion with their parents, and make a decision with their help, it also allows parents the opportunity to care for their children." He says he's proud to sponsor the legislation and hopes that that they can get the support to pass this bill. Again, we're talking about House Bill 177. It is a parental notification bill. You can find details and the exact language in the bill by going to KUNM.org, and I've posted a link there for you. Dana, your response to Francis's point about, wanting parents to be to have the opportunity to participate in this decision with their children.
It's a tough situation, and I think we all have to remember too that every situation and every young woman that gets pregnant has her own story, and we're not in her shoes for one thing. And I do think, basically, this law is unnecessary. It just serves to insert government into any family dynamic. And as we talked about, the majority of youth who do talk to their parents, we know that's going to happen, and those families will decide what to do within themselves. There are many young people who do feel safe, of course, talking to an auntie, a sister, or even a person of faith in their church. So I think there's access for young people to go to somebody that they trust, and if they in fact trusted their parents to share the information and make the decision with them, they would do so, because forced parental notification just takes this important decision away from young people. That's pretty much my feeling about it, and I know that within the pro-choice organizations that NOW belongs to, we absolutely feel really strong about that.
We are talking about women's reproductive rights in New Mexico and some legislation that has been introduced in the state legislature this session that could impact those rights. What are your thoughts? What do you think about a parental notification law here in New Mexico for young women and girls under the age of 16? The number to call locally here in Albuquerque is 277-5866. You can also call toll-free 877-899-5866. You can post your comments online. You can also email callinshow@kunm.org. We're speaking with Dana Middleton of the National Organization for Women's Santa Fe Chapter and Nancy Koenigsberg, who is with Disability Rights New Mexico. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
In the Chinese zodiac, this is the year of the snake. It's a perfect time to shed the old, a great time to get rid of that old car or truck that's just sitting there doing no good. One phone call and it'll be towed away and transformed into really valuable help for KUNM, plus a KUNM membership and tax deduction for you. It's easy. Just call 888-KUNM-CAR. That's 888-586-6227.
This is the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm Elaine Baumgartel. We're taking your comments and questions today about legislation that has been introduced in the legislature this session that would impact women's reproductive rights. There are four bills that have been introduced in the House, at least, that I have found, and that have some of which have been featured in some media coverage. House Bill 206, Abortion as Evidence Tampering in Some Cases, was introduced by Representative Catherine Brown. It is right now in the House Consumer and Public Affairs Committee, and I did invite Representative Brown to join us this morning. She was not available. We've also been talking about House Bill 177, the Parental Notification Rights Act. That one was introduced by Alonzo Baldonado. I don't believe he's going to be able to join us this morning. That bill is scheduled to be heard today in the House Consumer and Public Affairs Committee. There is also a similar Senate version of this parental notification bill that has been introduced. It was introduced by Senator John Ryan. I want to go now to Representative Nora Espinosa's bill. This one is called a Woman's Right to Know Act. It also is scheduled to be heard in the House Consumer and Public Affairs Committee today. It's House Bill 122. There's a link online at KUNM.org. And this bill would require abortion providers to present a pretty detailed list of information to women who seek abortions. Dana, can you talk to us a little bit about what this bill would require and what that would mean for women in New Mexico who decide that they would like to have an abortion?
Well, this bill is really the most alarming of all. Actually, we're referring to this as a forced view, forced ultrasound. And we believe that forcing a woman to an ultrasound or to listen to the description of her fetus is really another government interference in her personal private medical decision. And this bill would just shame women. It's insulting to women, and it's also insulting to doctors. I just can't imagine that there would be a situation where a woman would be forced lying there I've had an ultrasound, I've had two babies, I've had an abortion in the past, and I can't imagine lying there and having to turn your head, and then because if you won't listen to what he's saying, then they force you to look. But if you don't look, then he has to read it and sign. I mean, it is so insulting to women. And this is another, I mean, NOW strongly believes, and I think our pro-choice coalition here in New Mexico, we're so alarmed and so befuddled by this kind of attitude and can't imagine that this is going to go through. It's just shocking.
When this bill says, and I'm reading from page 10 of this bill on the ultrasound requirement, which is what you're talking about,
yes.
When this bill says that a woman giving informed consent involves having the physician perform an obstetric ultrasound. Is that the on-the-belly ultrasound or the vaginal ultrasound?
Well, this is something that we're wondering about, too, and the language in this bill was also really muddled and badly written. But, you know, Texas has this law, and at the moment, some of the clinics on the east side of our state, certainly in Clovis, are now sending women to Albuquerque if they decide to have an abortion, certainly if they're carrying a deformed fetus and want to do that, because if they go over the border into Texas, they have that vaginal ultrasound. And this is just another trauma for a pregnant woman to go through. And again, I get back to the fact that we honor all choices that women make regarding reproductive rights. I mean, if a woman wants to have a baby, you know, I'm all for it. I'll be the first one to buy baby clothes. But, you know, women need to make these decisions by themselves and with their trusted partner, if they have one, their doctor, their person of faith, and to put this on women in this really, it's so disrespectful. It's just, and insulting to doctors.
Are you listeners in favor of a required ultrasound for women who are seeking an abortion? The number to call locally here in Albuquerque is 277-5866. You can also call toll-free 877-899-5866. You can post your comments online. You can also email callinshow@kunm.org. This bill that was introduced in the House, it's House Bill 122. It's called a Woman's Right to Know Act. It was introduced by Representative Nora Espinosa. I did invite her to join us this morning by phone from Santa Fe to talk about her bill, and she did not take us up on that offer. Nancy, I want to go to you and ask about an ultrasound, a requirement for an ultrasound. How would that impact different kind of aspects of the disability community or the disabled community, folks who are seeking abortions?
Again, excuse me. That disability is not uniform, so people can have disabilities of all sorts, and I'm thinking about what this would be like for a person with an intellectual disability. I'm trying to wrap my head around this totally. For example, let's take a young woman with autism, a young woman with mental illness, a young woman with, I mean, each of them are different in terms of the reaction. So to say that there is a single response, it's not possible. So we'll start with the example of if this is to inform the young woman who is pregnant, and likely if it's a child with a disability, it's sexual violence by somebody that she knows. This procedure itself can be as intrusive and as traumatizing, maybe not exactly as traumatizing, but revisiting of a traumatic event, because she will be held down. Something will be done forcibly to her. And she's supposed to get the information. Well, what does a young woman with a cognitive impairment do with this information that she's supposed to, so she has a right to know? I'm not understanding that at all. If the decision is made that termination of pregnancy is what needs to happen, then terminate the pregnancy. I think this is kind of torture, quite frankly. And then something that I thought of actually when you and I were talking yesterday afternoon, I wonder if this might not be a violation of the Americans with Disabilities Act. It's a question. I don't have an answer. And the reason being is, first of all, I mean, the notion that people with disabilities should be reasonably accommodated. And I would question whether this state law would, in fact, conflict with federal law, because I would see, you know, if such a thing existed, and I hope it does not, that it would prevent the clinician from reasonably accommodating somebody by saying she doesn't want this, or her guardian doesn't want this procedure, and it would in fact make it more difficult for her. you know, what about a woman who is blind, or a woman who is deaf, or a woman who has severe contractures due to having been in a car accident? I mean, it makes no sense to me. And I think the question of is it a civil rights violation is an issue.
And is it your take on this, Nancy, that it's unclear from the language in the bill whether it would be a vaginal ultrasound or kind of an on-the-belly ultrasound?
Well, the language says using whichever method the physician and patient agree is best under the circumstances. Well, this is the first place a woman has a choice in this, or the physician can use clinical judgment. I find that to be kind of astounding. So I would hope that it would not be a transvaginal ultrasound. But again, the whole process, I think, is it can be extremely detrimental and traumatizing.
Let's go now to the phones. We're talking about the legislation, at least three. We've gotten to three of four bills that have been introduced in the House this year by state lawmakers. You can find links to these bills online at KUNM.org. We're talking with Nancy Koenigsberg with Disability Rights New Mexico and Dana Middleton with the Santa Fe chapter of NOW. Let's go now to the phones. Jane in Albuquerque. Good morning. You're on the air.
Yes, good morning. I just think it says a lot that these Republicans are excited about introducing anti-choice legislation, but then they want to hide behind a spokesperson. They don't want to come onto your show and address these issues. And I think the Republican Party is trying to take control of the message, because people, when they introduce this legislation, then they show their ignorance and comments, and so they're afraid to respond to questions. And also I wanted to say that both anti-choice laws and rape are about controlling women's choices over their body. So in some respects, they're the same. They're about somebody else taking a choice away from a woman.
Thanks for your comment, Jane. I do want to mention, in all fairness, the session is in session in Santa Fe, and these lawmakers are in Santa Fe. I believe the session starts at 8, so I know that they are very busy. I did also offer the opportunity to do taped interviews prior to the show in order to be able to speak with the representatives and explore their thoughts about these pieces of legislation that they've introduced. Again, I was not afforded the opportunity to do that with these four representatives. And I am talking about Larry Larrañaga, Nora Espinosa, Alonzo Baldonado, and Catherine Brown. Let's go back to the phone. PJ in Albuquerque. Good morning, PJ. You're on the air.
Good morning. One of the first point I'd like to make, and depending on how much time you have, is that people who call themselves pro-lifers really mostly aren't. They're mostly anti-abortionists. Because generally, as soon as that child is born, their concern about that child stops. They don't. The people who support this generally want to put the responsibility of that child. They want to force the woman to have the child, and then put the responsibility of caring and raising that child upon the woman solely. They don't want to provide health care. They don't want to provide food. They don't want to provide a decent education to these children. They just want to force the woman to have the child. And the second point I want to make is that it's women generally who teach the children morals in this country, generally speaking. And it's the women who are most misogynistic, which is unfortunate, because it's the women who often teach their children that they should give up these rights to men, that they should give up these rights to the state, that this is the way that it should be, instead of teaching their children. And I'm not saying all women, but there's a large portion of women who teach their children that they shouldn't have control over their own bodies, that it's somebody else who should decide for them what should happen to their bodies. And the last point I want to make is that I think it's really unfortunate, but I think that we ought to just call that one bill what it is rape by the state. If the state is going to force you to be penetrated before they're going to allow you to exercise your rights over your own body, then that's nothing but forcing the woman to be raped, which may have been raped once before. Now they're getting raped by the state. And I think that that's really a sad state that we're in as far as people on this earth. Anyway, that's all I have to say, but thank you very much.
Thanks for your call, PJ. Let's go to Ann in Albuquerque. Good morning, Ann. You're on the air.
Good morning. I'm glad you're discussing these issues. And I was actually at the Roundhouse last Friday to celebrate the 40th anniversary of Roe v. Wade. And there was an amazing group of people, men, women, young, old. It was a wonderful support for that legislation. However, the Parental Notification Rights Act, I'm a Planned Parenthood escort. And
What does that mean, Anne, when you say you're an escort?
That I stand in the parking lot at the clinic, and when patients come, and it doesn't matter what they come for, because Planned Parenthood does all kinds of health care for women, not just abortions, or not even, that's not the biggest thing they do. They are a health care center for women. But I am there so that when a woman gets out of her car, I can say, okay, let me walk you to the door, pay no attention to these people out on the street who are going to shout at you. And when I'm there, I find that many young women have their mothers and sometimes their fathers with them. But they have to be able to make that choice. They cannot be forced to tell their parents unless if their parents might not be sympathetic and helpful.
Thanks for your call, Anne. We've got one more caller, Mary in Placitas. And Mary, if you can make your comment brief, we're right up at the end of the show. Thanks.
I'm an incest survivor, and I experienced the whole issue of abortion through the focus of being a member of a very fundamentalist Catholic family. And I knew if I became pregnant, I could not have an abortion. I decided at junior high level that I would simply kill myself. And if this is the outcome our legislature approves of in order to grant women the right to their own bodies, the only right I had was to die. And I think this is something to be considered. Do we want both mother and child dead? Is this their choice? I mean, you cannot even imagine how much of a terrifying issue this is for a little child.
Thank you very much for your call, Mary. We're coming up against the end of the show right now. Nancy, your last thoughts about these pieces of legislation that would affect women's reproductive rights from the perspective of disability rights?
Well, again, in terms of sexual assault and rape, the thing is, the most important is that people pay attention to what's going on with people who cannot convey information, act, and prosecute. And the abortion issue will be the same for people with disabilities as anybody else.
Dana Middleton with NOW, the Santa Fe chapter, your last thoughts. And again, we're right up at the end of this show, if you could keep them brief.
Yes, well, abortion is a deeply personal and often really complex decision, and I don't think you can make that decision for someone else. And I think these four bills are really dangerous, and I will be over at the Roundhouse today.
Thanks so much for joining us. Dana Middleton, again, with the National Organization for Women Santa Fe Chapter. Nancy Koenigsberg with Disability Rights New Mexico. We did invite the sponsors of the House bills to join us this morning, and we did not have them participate. They were not available to participate. The links to the bills and to the names of the representatives are online at KUNM.org, as also the audio from the show will be just shortly after the show is over. Thanks so much for joining us. Engineering this morning by Roman Garcia. Michael Hess was producing the show this morning. Our news intern, Andy Lyman, screened your calls. If you have comments or questions or show tips, email us at callinshow@KUNM.org. or post your comments online at KUNM.org. I'm Elaine Baumgartel. Thanks for joining us.